Absolutely. Welcome, everyone, to Momentum Mastery. This is one of two bonus calls that we're doing in the month of June, focusing on the work of Byron Katie. And I'm just really, really delighted to share this information with you because it's had such a huge impact in my own life. Let me start by asking you a few questions. Who in your life angers, frustrates, or saddens you? Just kind of sit with that question for a minute. Ever wish that you could take those tormenting thoughts about certain people and literally have them surgically removed from your mind forever? Would you like to know exactly how to return to your inner peace and power when someone pushes your buttons? Then, if you answered yes to any of these questions, you're absolutely in the right place. I'm going to be sharing with you literally the single most important process that has not only helped me transform my inner suffering when it was at its all-time peak, it allowed me to experience literally the deepest sense of inner peace I've ever known. And I have to say that inner peace was not always a big priority for me. It really wasn't until I was right in the middle of this whole dark night of the soul period, inner turmoil and emotional pain totally at its all-time high, that I was even ready for the work of Byron Katie and really ready to make inner peace more of a priority. So I am grateful with every ounce of my being for the suffering that actually has led to this work. And I'm even more grateful for my willingness to rigorously apply this work in my life. One thing that I see quite a lot is people get introduced to the work of Byron Katie, but they never really actually apply it to their life. They might do one worksheet, and that's it. They feel like they've got a good understanding. That is literally 1% of the benefit that you can get from the work. So I hope that part of what we accomplish here today is really to have you get clear about what the work is, why it's so valuable to do the work, and it's called the work for a reason. You don't have to do a little inner work. We'll talk about when you should do the work and when sitting down is appropriate. We'll literally invite you to walk yourself through the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet and each of the four questions and the turnaround that make up the work. So, and then we'll talk too a little bit more about some principles in applying the work to your life. If you choose to really take on applying the work in your own life, it can bring about radical transformation and radical inner peace. So I hope to inspire you as we proceed today. So for those of you that aren't familiar with the work of Byron Katie, it's simply a way of identifying and questioning the thoughts that cause all the fear, violence, depression, frustration, and suffering. And through the work, we can experience the happiness of undoing those thoughts through the work and literally allow your mind to return to its true, awakened, peaceful, creative nature. So that's where we're going here today, and I couldn't be more delighted to do so. So let's talk just a bit what the work is. I've kind of given a little bit of a definition. It's simply a process, also known as inquiry, and at its most basic level, it's simply four questions and a turnaround. Now you're going to get really familiar with those questions. It's a method for investigating our thoughts, particularly the stressful ones. And as Katie says, you know, the ones that are working for you, you know, we can kind of just leave those alone. But the ones that are creating suffering, the ones that we continually replay in our heads, whether we like it or not, that are creating suffering and frustration and inner turmoil, these are the ones that we really want to put up against inquiry. So that is what the work is all about. So let's talk just a moment about why we want to do the work. So we've talked a little bit that it's a great tool for helping us access peace, ease, freedom in our life. It's a great way to get those unproductive thoughts out of your head. It's a great way to move out of stress or pain or suffering or irritation or frustration, any version of stress, move out of that. It's also a beautiful way to find what I call the no-thought space. Like even, you can do it right now, to step into a no-thought space and experience even for a moment the peace of no thought. It's also a phenomenal way to reconnect with your most powerful self. This is where we get to access our intuition and guidance. It's a great way to evolve out of some type of a holding pattern. So maybe there's a pattern that you've been running in relationship for, could be for years and decades, could be just one that you've been running for the last couple months, but this process can really help you evolve out of any kind of a holding pattern. It's a great way to learn more about yourself and see the hidden parts of yourself that maybe you haven't owned. We've talked in Momentum Mastery about spiritual wholeness and different paths to spiritual wholeness. This is one of the great, great tools and the great paths to wholeness. And it's a great way to bring us to a peaceful place to really make powerful choices. And let's face it, I mean, suffering is so yesterday. It seems to be something that we accept in our modern day culture is just the way it is, to have a certain amount of stress and a certain amount of frustration, a certain amount of overwhelm. And you know, for me at least, there came a point in my life where it's like, you know, enough of this. Like, I'm really done. I'm tired of suffering. I'm tired of the thoughts and the emotional patterns and the habits that are having me experience suffering when there's no physical pain being caused to my body. So hopefully you're in a place there where you don't need to get all the way to the peak of your suffering. Chances are, if you've been in Momentum Mastery over the last year or are listening to any part of this series, you know, you might not be in the heaps of suffering. So you might not be as inspired to do the work. And I really want to encourage that at the very least, you take on the assignment of completing a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet and really walking yourself through the four questions and the turnaround after this call, after you're listening to this on MP3 or CD, so that you really, really apply that. And we'll be having another call like this in 2 weeks where the only thing I'm going to be doing is coaching people on the work. So it's a real opportunity if you haven't to actually be walked through these four questions. It's very, very powerful as an independent tool, which is actually how I used it and how I came about to experience a sudden onset of inner peace in the time of crisis. But it's also equally powerful, maybe even more so powerful, to be coached through it, because there's a different space that gets held. And sometimes when we're doing inquiry with ourselves, the mind likes to play little tricks on us. So I'd love to give as many people as possible the opportunity to experience that life coaching. So that call will be in 2 weeks. So let's look at this. When should we do the work? And, of course, we could say you can do the work any time you want, but really there's a couple times that are really more appropriate. First off, any time that you're in a place of reaction or particularly activated with somebody. This is a great tool when your source of suffering feels like it's somebody else, because maybe it's a time when you're filling in judgment, you're not feeling particularly at peace, you're feeling caught up in your stuff, like really run by your stuff. that is a good time to pull out a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. And as Katie says, judge your neighbor and then ask four questions and turn it around. Like, judge your neighbor, write it down, ask four questions, and turn it around. And here's another time to do the work is just in a place that you're in a real place of resistance. And it could be literally at any level. The truth is we can apply the process of inquiry or the work literally to any thought. And it can be pretty magical when we're willing just to look and inquire just what we'll find. So here's how it's going to work. If you've got the worksheet in front of you, fantastic. If you're listening to this on MP3, we've actually included the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, so you've got it nice and handy. So look in your packet or look in an email so you've got the PDF download, and note that there are two sheets. And I want to go through each of the kind of Judge Your Neighbor questions. And what I'd like you to do first off is think of somebody in your life that angers, disappoints, or confuses you. And I want you to just think of one person right now. And this is somebody that you haven't forgiven 100%. You want to avoid writing about yourself yet. Later working with inquiry, you can actually do a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet on yourself. And that can be super, super powerful, but not the greatest place to start. A real key here is you want to use short and simple sentences. Don't censor yourself. Just really allow yourself to experience the anger and pain as if the situation were occurring right now. Okay? So as I like to say, let your ego have a heyday. This is full on judge your neighbor. This is not about being kind or nice or any of that. It's really let it all out. And it's really important, too, to write down your thoughts. So write down your answers here. If you're looking at the worksheet or listening to this as an audio, okay, great. Go pull out a sheet of paper and literally write down a couple statements for each one of these questions. So the first question is, who angers, disappoints, or confuses you, and why? What is it about them that you don't like? So, and you might even substitute here, it's like, well, you know, I'm not really angry at or disappointed with anyone right now. You might substitute even, you know, well, who annoys you and why? So if you don't have a supercharged experience in your life, usually we have got at least one of those kind of people. So look for them and we're going to focus on one person. So what you'll want to do is fill in the blanks and say, you know, I'm angry, and I'll just use an example here. I'm angry at Paul because he doesn't love me. He never listens to me. He always yells at me. Okay, so that would be a great example of filling in the blank. Second question is, how do you want them to change? What do you want them to do? So you'd fill in the blank. I want Paul to apologize. I want Paul to listen to me. I want Paul to understand me. Right? Again, we're using short, simple phrases. Then we go to question number 3. What is it that they should or shouldn't do, be, think, or feel? What advice could you offer? And again, let's let whoever it is that's pushing your buttons, really let them know what you think they should or shouldn't do, think, be, or feel. So fill in the blank there. What is it that they should or shouldn't do, be, think, or feel? What advice could you offer? Great. Fill in the blank. Paul should let his emotions show more fully. Paul shouldn't watch so much television. Paul should pay more attention to me. Fill in the blank. Fourth question Do you need anything from them? Do you need anything from them? What do they need to do in order for you to be happy? So really check in. And of course, you know, again, as we're answering these questions, we're not being spiritual or kind. We're really, it's like, you know, what do you need for them? You know, I need them to frickin', you know, pay attention to me. I need them to understand me. I need them to be respectful of me, right? So write those down, whatever it is pertaining to your situation. Number five, what do you think of them? Make a list. Don't be kind. Be judgmental and petty. So here, you know, Paul is irresponsible, he's unethical, lazy, unfocused, selfish, whatever it is. Again, don't be kind, be judgmental and petty. And here we're just listing words. All right, so as you fill in the blank. And then the last one is, what is it that you don't want to experience with that person again? So you fill in the blank. I don't ever want to feel neglected by Paul again. All right? So just fill in the blank. I don't ever want to be in an argument with Paul again. Okay, so that's step one with the work, is to complete your Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. We're going to write them down. We're going to use short sentences. We're going to not censor yourself. We're going to really try and get as fully connected to the experience of anger or pain as though it were occurring right now. And you want to get it all out on paper. And I want to just say, the first time that I really did the work, I had been listening to Byron Katie's CDs actually while I was doing my Christmas cards. So I was actually multitasking, but there were 7 CDs in her CD program, Loving What Is, a program I highly recommend. I've probably listened to it 7-plus times, and it's truly been one of just the most powerful programs affecting my own inner peace. And here as I'm doing my Christmas cards and listening and so forth, and I had a certain somebody in my life who literally pushed every single button that I didn't even know I had. And I will be honest with you, I did follow the instructions explicitly in terms of writing everything down, using short, simple sentences, not censoring myself, getting fully connected, but I didn't use the worksheet. I used notepad paper, and I literally filled out probably 3, if not 4 pages of thoughts. That's how many thoughts, reactive thoughts, emotional thoughts that I had in my mind and my being at that particular time. So I it was notebook paper and single line, and I just kept going and going. It was as though I was on a mission. I'm going to get out every single freaking thought about this person, because you know what? I was done with suffering. I wanted relief. I was willing to try anything. One of my coaches had walked me through the process of inquiry once before in a coaching session, just as it related to maybe one thought or something like that. And I was a little annoyed, I have to say, at the time, yet I experienced some nice relief after that. But as it works, you know, it's not typically just one thought that is causing us pain and suffering. It's a whole family of thoughts. So I was on a mission to go in and just, I'm addressing all these thoughts. So I use notebook paper, so it's something you can do, but you want to write out the full sentences. So, you know, I went through each one. I'm angry at Bruce, was my person. I'm angry at Bruce because, and fill in the blank, because he wasn't returning my phone calls, whatever it was. I listed out every single, in fact, somewhere in a file, I think I have my original sheets because, because they had such a profound impact on me. So write them out and go with each one. And then I went to, you know, I'm disappointed at Bruce because, I'm confused at Bruce because, and I use complete sentences, got it all out. So it's really key. Hopefully, as we've been talking, if you've got a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet in front of yourself, you're actually you know, have some statements filled in, and maybe you're feeling pretty good because you're, you know, it feels good to kind of just acknowledge what is going on in the mind. So we want to go to the second page in the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet is essentially instructions for doing the work. And I want to just note here, actually, something that is written at the top of this worksheet, which is that, you know, it's now time to investigate each of your statements from this side of the worksheet using the four questions and the turnaround. The work is a meditation. So really sit with that. The work is a meditation. It's about awareness. It's not about trying to change your mind. We want to let the mind ask the questions and then contemplate the answer. Take your time, go inside, and wait for the deeper answers to surface. So very, very simple, but if we're in a rush to go through this, we may not get the same result. So really to know, it's about meditation, it's about contemplation. So let's look at each of these four questions. The first question is it true? So we want to come back to one of the statements. We want to take one statement at a time, and we're going to just be with each of the four questions with that one statement, okay? And as I mentioned, I had 3 to 4 pages of notebook paper filled with thoughts. I literally did go through one by one each one of these four questions and literally sat with each one. So very, very key and important. So let's give an example of that. We're going to use the example, Paul should understand me. It's one of my favorites. Like, oh, how many people don't feel understood by their significant other, by friends, by parents, by children, right? We could apply that. That's a big one. It's a big wound for so many of us, just not feeling understood. So let's take that statement. Paul should understand me. The first question is it true? Is it true that he should understand you? So be still. Wait for the heart's response. He should understand me. And whatever answer you get, maybe you get, yes, he should understand me. That's totally good. And you might find a no pops up. No, he shouldn't understand me. So either one is good. We don't want to, there's no wrong answers in inquiry. So then we want to move to the second question, which is, can you absolutely know that it's true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? Paul should understand me. Ultimately, can you really know what he should or shouldn't understand? Now, if we really sit with that question, can we really know what he should or shouldn't understand? And can you absolutely know what's in his best interest to understand? Is it to understand you? Is it to understand someone else? Is it to understand himself? Right? Can you absolutely know that it's true? Paul should understand me. Just kind of sit with that. Let me go to the third question. How do you react when you think that thought? Okay, so we try it on. What happens when you think the thought, Paul should understand me, and it doesn't appear that he is? Do you experience anger, stress, frustration? Do you give him the look? Do you try to change him in some way? How do these reactions feel? Does that thought bring stress or peace into your life? So again, we want to just be still as you listen. How do you react when you think that thought? Paul should understand me. And I'll throw this in as I was going through each of the statements of my own worksheet. I tell you, I was very serious about this, and I had a second blank sheet of notebook paper, and when I asked this thought, how do you react when you think that thought, I literally wrote down bullets of, how do I react? It's, you know, I feel angry. I feel stressed. I feel like he doesn't care. I feel worthless. And I would go until I couldn't come up with anything else. Right? And I would write that down to capture that. And then I would go to the, you know, when I got to the next one, how do you react when you think this thought? Great. If it was already on the list, angry, then I just gave it another tick mark. But I often found that every thought sort of evoked a different reaction in me. So we just want to really notice, how do you react when you think the thought? We want to go to the next question, which is, who would you be without the thought? Who would you be without the thought? And for this, just, you know, close your eyes. Maybe picture yourself in the presence of the person you want to understand you. And now imagine looking at that person just for a moment without the thought, I want him to understand. What do you see? What would your life look like without the thought, he should understand me? Kind of sit with that. Who would you be without the thought? And as I stepped into each of these questions, what I often found was, who would I be without the thought? I would be more peaceful. I would be free. I would be just me. I would be alive. Right? So it's really about looking. You know, again, the answers are for you to find. And again here, who would I be without the thought? As I sat with each one of those answers, I also had another sheet of paper that was blank to begin with, and I would write down the thoughts. Who would I be without the thought, he should understand me? And I wrote down those answers as another way of capturing it. Also works just to answer the question or say those answers out loud if you're doing the process of inquiry with a friend or a loved one or a coach. So those are the four questions. Then we want to go to the turnaround. And the turnaround is an opportunity to consider the opposite of what you believe to be true. And it's likely you'll find several turnarounds. So, for example, Paul should understand me turns around to Paul shouldn't understand me. You know, and isn't that reality sometimes? You know, Paul shouldn't understand me. That's more true in reality some of the time. You can also, as we're doing turnarounds, I like to think of it as substituting pronouns. So, instead of Paul should understand me, let's substitute myself. I should understand me. Oh, that's my job, not his. I should understand me. And in sitting with that thought, I might, wow, I should understand me. And yet, how am I doing with that? Then we look at another possible turnaround. I should understand Paul. So literally we flip-flop. Paul shouldn't understand me. I should understand Paul. And can I understand that he doesn't understand me? All right, so we want to sit here with each one and discover what we find. And again, if we're approaching the work as a meditation, as a process of awareness, you know, we're not, you know, we're not trying to change our mind. We're not trying to, certainly not trying to make ourselves wrong. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I see people make is, yeah, well, I looked at the turnaround, you know, I shouldn't, you know, Paul should do this. It's like, I should do that, you know. It's like, well, yeah, but that's not the point of inquiry, is to turn this into a beat-up session where you're literally just shaming yourself. No, it's really about genuinely aiming for the truth, aiming for a greater truth or greater perspective of all the truths. So the key here is about letting yourself experience each one of the turnarounds. And you can ask, you know, is that statement as true or truer as the original statement? Again, we're not going for blame. We're not trying to make you feel guilty here. But we want to just explore different alternatives that can bring a sense of peace. All right, so that's what we're going for here. And, you know, as you sit with certain ones, you know, I remember doing the inquiry on, you know, Bruce should call me back. I'm looking at the turnaround for that. I should call me back. And I thought, what? I should call me back. And yet when I sat with that, again, this is meditation and awareness. I sat with that. I should call me back. You know, even metaphorically, you know, when I'm caught up in a thought, Bruce should call me back, I'm not available for me. My sense of power is disconnected. It's as though that plug that is connected into the wall to be a source of electricity, it's out of the wall. Now, I should call me back. It's like, I should call me back. I should call my power back. You know, I should call the real me back, the powerful me. So there's a way with just about every single turnaround, if we just sit with it long enough, its insights will come. And then if we're willing to take it the next step, which is after going through, you know, I mentioned I had all these worksheets, and I literally, when I got to the turnaround section, now, as I mentioned, I was fairly motivated to get out of pain, and I was at the all-time peak. So when it came to the turnarounds, I didn't want to leave anything for chance. So I literally wrote down every single possible turnaround for each and every thought, as many as I could possibly get to. And then what I did is I literally sat with each one of those turnarounds. So literally, you can imagine pages and pages. I had more pages of turnarounds than I did of judge your neighbor thoughts. And as I literally sat with each one, there were certain ones of those turnarounds that really touched my core the most deeply. And those are the ones that I start. I'm like, okay, I need to pay attention to this. You know, might be, could have been one like, Bruce should love me. And the turnaround became, I should love me. And I really sat with that, you know, I should love me. And even to drop the should, I love me. And just to be with that authentically as a more predominant thought, now that's a useful thought. I love me. And now how do I live my life when I live into that turnaround? I love me. I'm kinder to myself. I hang out with people who love me and treat me with respect. Yeah, I'm at my best. You know, I do the things that nurture me. I love me. What a great thought. So let's go to the one last piece, which is the turnaround for number 6. This one's a little bit different. So if the thought is, I don't ever want to experience an argument with Paul again, the turnaround is, I'm willing to experience an argument with Paul again. And we might think, what? I'm willing to experience an argument with Paul again? I thought we want to get off this, right? This isn't going to help me. The other statement is, I look forward to experiencing an argument with Paul again. Again, we're like, what? I'm willing to? I look forward to experiencing an argument with Paul again? No, I don't. I don't want that. And actually, what this final turnaround for number 6 is about is it's about welcoming all your thoughts and experiences with open arms. When we feel any resistance to a thought, our work is not done. And when we can honestly look forward to experiences that have been uncomfortable, then there's no longer anything to fear in our lives, and we can see everything as a gift that can bring you self-realization. that's really a big one. I'm willing to experience. I look forward to experiencing because it's an opportunity to come back to the work and walk yourself through these questions. And I'll tell you, there came a point. I'll kind of continue the story. So what actually happened? You know, here I was very committed. I wrote down every single thought. I was doing a major purging from the mind. I literally sat with each question. Is it true? Can I absolutely know that it's true? I wrote down, how do I react when I think each thought? Wrote down those answers. Who would I be without the thought? Really sat with each one of those. Wrote down every single possible turnaround, sat with each one of those, starred the ones that I felt were touching me at the deepest soul level that I really needed to integrate more deeply. So then what happened? It's, you know, literally after taking each one of the thoughts kind of through the work, I was feeling pretty good. I was feeling pretty peaceful. I was feeling really grateful that this guy had been pushing all my buttons and like all of this because I'm feeling connected to me. I'm feeling more peaceful, more at ease. And I'll tell you, then I thought, well, you know, I've got to go test this out. You know, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling really peaceful. But, you know, what if I'm like, you know, with Bruce? Because being with him, you know, that would like really like push the buttons even more, right? So he lived in Northern California. I lived in Southern California at the time. So I needed to go up to Northern California actually to pick up a body sculpture of myself. I'd been invited by an artist. They were looking for models, and they literally used my body to create a series of sculptures. I guess some of them are in Napa somewhere. I have no idea. But my compensation was I got one of these sculptures. So I literally had a sculpture of my body at Bruce's house. And I needed to go up and pick it up at some point. And I had taken my car into the dealership, and they had given me an RX300. So I got an SUV. I actually had the right vehicle to go fetch my body from Bruce's home. And so I talked him into, hey, let me come up this weekend. And so I did. I drove up to Northern California, and I arrived really, really pretty late. And so got in, and I could tell he, you know, he was happy to see me or whatever. But come the morning time, like, I could already tell, like, he was in irritable mode. And he was in irritable mode enough to push a few more buttons. So I told you I had done a really thorough cleansing of every single thought, and I was feeling pretty clear. But there was another round of thoughts, and so he ended up going off to work. It was a weekend, and he was working on the weekend. That was fine. I went out on his back patio, and again, having just had a reactive experience, I sat down and wrote down every single thought that was still in my experience. I believe one of them was, Bruce doesn't understand me. Bruce should understand me. That was actually one of my super big ones. And I forget what some of the other ones were, but I really sat with that one, and it took a while to really get that he shouldn't understand me and that it was totally okay for him to not understand me. And so I did all the work. I was feeling kind of emotionally exhausted, went and took a nap. And as I wake up from a nap to a phone call, Bruce asked me if I wanted something to eat. And I was sort of feeling neutral. I'm like, you know, I really could go either way. And he was asking because he was right at the place where there was an exit for food, and he either could get off, get food, or not. But because I wasn't decisive, he just kept going, and he now was feeling, well, I'll tell you, he was feeling, I should have made a decision, right? So he is now attached to a thought. But, you know, so he's driving back, and I can already, you know, feel that there's anguish, and he's upset and everything else. And he comes walking in, and again, now, you know, he's totally upset. I've now done the work on every single possible thought that's been in my existence that has created suffering and separation as it related to Bruce. And suddenly, even though he was very, very upset with me, I was in this very calm, still, centered place. I wasn't forcing myself to be in a place of peace. I literally was just authentically peaceful. And I could see, oh, I see what's going on. He's attached to the thought, he should have made a decision. I should have made a decision. And I actually tried to explain that to him, but you know how it is to explain things to people that are upset. Their minds don't comprehend information so well. But fortunately, I'd done the work on, you know, he should understand me. So I'm like, I was totally peaceful with, nope, he shouldn't understand me. So, like, this is totally fine. And, of course, I'm peaceful. He's getting more and more upset. And, ultimately, you know, we had this conversation the whole time. My peace is getting stronger. And, of course, he's getting more and more upset because nothing he's saying is affecting me. And ultimately, he sent me off in his spare bedroom to sleep on a waterbed that didn't have any heat. And it was really in that moment that I picked up an Eckhart Tolle book, The Power of Now Handbook, and started reading that. And because I had been so cleansed and purged of all these tormenting thoughts that I was really believing were true, thoughts like he should understand me, he should be kind to me, he should do this, you know, because each thought had been authentically questioned, I was standing in truth, which was really the truth of all was well, all was fine, I was connected in my power and peace, and, you know, ended up really just kind of, you know, going off to sleep in a blissful state. And as many of you have heard me share the story, that over the coming 3 weeks, that it literally, there wasn't anything that fazed me, and just everything I saw was just delightfully bright and fulfilling. And I also, when I say that this work is powerful, you know, I'm sharing very firsthand, you know, what's possible, particularly if you're really willing to dig in there and look at every single nook and cranny. And I don't recommend waiting until you're at the peak of your suffering. That's a good time, too. Take it whenever you get inspired to do the work, but you don't need to wait. So we're going to do this. I just want to offer a few principles in doing the work and then offer a couple tools. And then we've got some folks here on the line. If somebody is interested potentially in doing the work, we may have a little bit of time maybe to run one person through the example. So if you would like to do the work, you can press *2 to raise your hand. And here in about 5 minutes or so, I'll call on you, and hopefully you will have a couple Judge or Niebuhr statements that we can work with here live, so we can kind of get real life example. So let's come back to a few principles in doing the work, and you'll see some of these principles in chapters, well, in lessons 8 and 9 in The Power of Inner Choice. So all of you should have either the ebook copy or a real copy in your hands. And if you go to either one of these chapters, you get a really good refresher about the core principles of the work. And let me run through a few of those. One is that you can do the work literally on any thought that you have resistance to or attachment to. And while it's not recommended initially to do those thoughts to yourself, it can be really powerful when you do. So I remember, by the way, let me say this. After that fateful day where I, you know, that week I had done every single thought related to Bruce and then gone up, got triggered again, and did a second round and layer, in the months that followed, you know, I kind of went back into what I would call, kind of felt at the time like, you know, slipped back under. It's like I sort of have had access to that really pure, peaceful place, but still, on occasion, I would get triggered. And I remember one of those nights when I wrote down the thought, I'm angry, right? So there's just a plain old thought. It doesn't fit the judge or neighbor worksheet, but I had the thought, I'm angry. And I sat with that. I'm like, is it true? I'm angry. And as I listened, the answer that came to me in that moment was no. And can you guess which part of me answered that question? It wasn't the ego part. Yeah, the ego part of me was angry. But the real part of me, which is the part that was answering the question, was clear that even when I'm holding on to the thought and in ego attachment to I'm angry, there's a part of me that was clearly not. And so just even that one question ended up being a really powerful experience. So we really can do the work on any thought. And I'll also say this, that not every thought is going to be as equally powerful. Generally, the ones that are most charged and the ones that have been most pervasive, usually those are the ones that have the biggest insights. We may have to do the work on those thoughts again and again to really get the deeper insights, but if we're willing to look, then they will arise. And it's not a, you know, like in that example I just shared, you know, it wasn't somebody telling me that, oh, you know, there's always a part of you that is always at peace. I experienced it for myself. And when we experience these answers for ourselves, that's why they call it self-realization. You know, this is where it really gets locked into your being and where real freedom and peace lies. Another key principle is that fighting reality is stressful. We've talked a lot about that in Momentum Mastery, about, you know, when we argue with reality, we fight with it, we resist it, we want to distort it, we want to reshape it, we deny it, right? All of that is stressful. When we're really looking reality squarely in the face, even if our significant other is raising their voice at us and really, really upset, I was literally in that moment, and I can't say I always do it, but in that moment, I really was embracing reality. I was embracing the fact that he was really fired up and charged. And embracing it, I was not in resistance and I was not suffering. Very cool. Another key principle is stressful thoughts are like cholesterol. And that analogy is, if we think of cholesterol clogging our arteries, making it difficult for blood to flow to different body parts and organs, stressful thoughts are like cholesterol in terms of clogging up our creative systems, our ability to be present, our ability to connect with others. So really to get stressful thoughts are like cholesterol, which is why as we embrace the work and we look at each one of these statements that is sticky in our mind, you know, it's almost as though the thought releases. You know, we might still come back to it, but it's much like if we look down the road and we saw what looks like a snake in the road, and we're afraid of snakes, and we're really, really scared, and then we go and we walk over the snake only to discover that the snake was not a snake after all. It actually was just a rope. And, you know, we might try and get, you know, scare ourselves and pretend, okay, that rope is really a snake, but once the mind is aware, once the mind has recognized the truth, it's hard to get charged in the same way. So big key thought there. Here's another key principle. When we attach to thoughts, even the true ones, there is suffering and stress. So let's say, for example, we could say Paul was rude, and you know, we're kind of attached to the thought that he shouldn't have been rude. But if we stay attached to that thought, you know, even though it's true in reality, there's stress and suffering. So yes, there's plenty of true thoughts. There's a war in the world. A lot of people get fixated on the fact that, you know, there is war. And people lose a lot of sleep over it, and they're aging their bodies, and they're bringing about a lot of inner turmoil by attaching to that thought. Of course, you know, if we're at peace with the fact that, you know, war is just one part of what's going on in reality, we don't necessarily have to be suffering. But sometimes true thoughts, there can be stress and suffering when we attach to them. Another key principle is a little formula, which is attachment to thought plus resistance equals stress and suffering. We talked about this in the releasing stressful thoughts call, that, you know, we can be attached but not resistant, no suffering. Or we can be resistant but not attached. You know, so for the example with, you know, the world is coming to an end, if we're not resisting that thought, even though it could be true in reality, you know, there's not going to be any stress and suffering. Another key principle, what is true in reality is what should be. And there could be a little bit of argument on this one, but what's true in reality is what should be. And the best way that I sit with this one is that, you know, it's reality is what is. And to say what should be is, in a way, playing God and rewriting the universe as we know it. It's also creating a lot of suffering for us. So if we can simply resolve ourselves that what's true in reality is what should be because it is so, It's a great way to dance with a lot of the thoughts of judgment around the should and should not. Another key principle in the absence of stressful thoughts is peace. And this is a big one. When we get to that question, who would I be without the thought? In order to answer that question, who would I be without that thought, we have to actually try that on. We have to imagine for a minute that we couldn't think that thought. And almost universally, what people say they experience in the absence of thought is some version of peace or freedom or love or just neutral, right? And the absence of stressful thoughts is peace. One of my clients who we did the work with, he would use that question sort of as a shortcut. So when he was getting stressed, and he would immediately identify what thought was causing him stress and would just immediately ask himself the question, well, who would I be without that thought? That was actually his favorite question in the process of inquiry. So you can't actually use it as little shortcuts. Like, who would I be without that thought? This can be useful if you're at a traffic light and you're, you know, wishing that it was turning green. It should be green. It's like, I need to, you know, I'm going to be late. This is going to have serious consequences. Whatever the thought is that's arising in the face of your traffic light, you might just try that. Who would I be without the thought? And see if you can find a place of stillness and peace, well, while you're waiting there at the traffic light and it's not turning green, or maybe you're stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic. It's another great one about, you know, who would I be without the thought, I'm going to be late? Great. You know, I might just be here, you know, resting peacefully, taking a moment to myself, you know, enjoying a moment of meditation in the privacy of my own car, you know, here on the 405 in Southern California. Another key principle, look for the thoughts under the thoughts. So as you're doing your Judge Your Neighbor worksheets and as you get really committed to uncovering the added thoughts, you might look, let's say an example could be maybe the thought of judgment is something around so-and-so isn't responding to my calls, right? So maybe you've got a son or daughter or in-law that doesn't like to take your calls on a regular basis, and you're having the thought, you know, well, they're not returning my calls, and you're noticing you're getting really charged up. You might ask yourself, well, you know, what do I make that mean? And that's kind of the way to find the thought under the thought. So the thought under the thought is they don't care, they don't love me, they don't respect me, you know, they're not valuing my time, they're not acknowledging me. So just continue to be curious if there's any other thoughts under the thoughts. Another key principle is live the turnaround. So this is a really super, super big one. Live the turnaround. So as you're identifying the turnarounds that are really speaking to your soul, that you clearly have not been living, you know, pick a few. You know, it doesn't, you know, need to be, you know, super crazy. It's impossible to try and live 25 turnarounds simultaneously. Our minds just don't work that way. So pick one or two that you want to keep in your forefront. And one might be, you know, if the thought is something, you know, Paul doesn't respect me. Maybe the turnaround you find is, I respect me. You might really work at living into that, you know. How do I live my life when I really live that turnaround? I kind of sit with that and really look and until it really becomes integrated as a part of your everyday being. Couple more principles here. Now we're giving you a full dose of the work of Byron Katie. So next key is that recognizing truth and accepting reality are the two biggest keys in taking a stressful thought and unplugging from it. So very key, recognizing truth, right? That's why we ask the question, is it true? Can I absolutely know that it's true? We're going for truth. And the other big key is about accepting reality. So while it might be true that somebody is visibly angry at me right now and I would rather them not, if I can accept the reality of that, I actually can be at peace with them being angry. The problem is most of us, somebody's angry at me, there's so many little hidden meanings. They don't love me, they're going to leave me, I might get hurt. You know, there's all these extra thoughts, but if we really sit with each of the thoughts under the thoughts, we can actually be in our place of wholeness in the midst of just about any situation. So that's a very key one. And another key principle, the work is a process that allows each individual to discover their own deeper truth. I've spoken to this a little bit about how it's not about me telling you what you're going to find when you do the process of inquiry. Byron Katie can't tell you. But we can ask the questions and invite you to look and listen to your own guidance and your own responses to inquiry. That's really where the beauty of the work lies. It's really individually, finding your own answers. And sometimes when I'm doing the work with a client, I may immediately, because I've done a lot of the work and I've walked a lot of people through the process of inquiry, it's one of my favorite tools in helping people connect back to a place of wholeness, and particularly when they're in relationship challenges. And sometimes I see turnarounds that they don't. I may offer a couple things that I see, but it's always up to the individual to try it on and see for themselves. And that's really how it works. Certainly, of all the pages and pages of turnarounds that I wrote, there were a few that were like, well, okay, that's kind of a stretch. There's not really a big charge on it either way. You know, okay, I can find some piece of truth with it, but it's not the most powerful turnaround in the world. There's going to be times when that is the case. And more often than not, when we're willing to look, we'll find that we do get really amazing insights. Okay, here's another principle. To the extent I can peacefully be with any thought, I am free. To the extent there is a reaction in me, even a tiny one, I still have work to do on my path to wholeness. All right, so we're really talking about getting rigorous here, that even if there's still, and it can be annoying, you know, here, you all know inner peace is one of my passions, so you can guess that, you know, when something arises, it's like, darn, you know, it's like, I thought I had that one handled, you know. But again, if we can come back and say, all right, you know, there's a deeper level for me to look at this and explore that reaction, each time I'm willing to look and each time I'm willing to take it deeper is just strengthening my reservoir of inner peace and my place of wholeness. So just to get to the extent we can peacefully be with any thought, we are free. And I know there's some thoughts that are like, no way, I can never be with that thought. You'd be surprised as you really sit with it. And we'll actually do a lot of coaching around this specifically in 2 weeks when we have our next call. And let's see, if there's anything else. Okay, I think I've actually covered kind of the key things. Just check in. Oh, good. I've got a volunteer here. Awesome. Is this Cindy?
Yeah.
Hey, welcome,
hi.
Welcome.
Welcome, welcome. Hi.
Hi.
It goes along with the same thing that I talked about on the Momentum Forum.
Okay. Great.
It's my thought is, if Clarissa really loved Brian, she would make an effort to get to know me.
Okay. Okay, great. And so great. So in this statement, we want to then shorten it down to, so Clarissa should make an effort to get to know you.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Here, I'm just going to write this down. And we may even shorten it further saying, Clarissa should get to know you. Is it true?
Yes.
Yes, of course it feels that way, right? Absolutely.
I have a real hard time letting go of that.
Yep, that's okay. And here's the beautiful thing. It's not about, oh, you know, not saying it's not true. It feels very true. So let's go to the next question. Can you absolutely know that it's true, Clarissa should get to know you?
I guess not.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like she should.
Okay, well, what's the part of you that feels like, well, you know, I guess not?
Because she's an individual.
Mm-hmm. Like, she can decide who she wants to get to know and who she doesn't want to get to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's nice of you to give her a choice. That's good.
Yeah.
Good. So let's look at this next question. How do you react when you think the thought Clarissa should get to know you and it doesn't seem apparent that she's making any effort?
It hurts me and it makes me very angry because I feel like it hurts my son.
Okay. It hurts me, makes you angry.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the mama bear comes out.
Okay. Mama bear comes out. Yeah. And how do you live your life when you think the thought, Clarissa should get to know you, and she's not?
How do I live my life?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I have the opportunity to when I think about it, it still makes me angry and it makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've done some work on it, and I have came a little bit, but it's such a strong...
Yeah. Anger.
Because I think other people should be like me, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I'm so loving and forgiving, and if somebody I love loves somebody else, I make it a point to get to know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's your rule. Clarissa?
That's my rule.
Clarissa does it a different way. She gets to know who she wants to. Yeah. So let's go to the next question. Who would you be without the thought, Clarissa should get to know you?
I don't know. I guess the same thing I wrote in the form, I guess I would just be the accepting, loving person that I claim to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very difficult time accepting that.
Okay. Yeah.
My feelings are different than they were before whenever I posted it on the form, but I still struggle with it.
Yeah. So just to really sit with it, you know, and just even close your eyes, and I want you to imagine that you are with Clarissa, and she's there, and she's not making any effort to get to know you, but I want you to just imagine that you are not, you don't hold any thought that she should get to know you. Just imagine what that would be like, just you being the accepting, loving person that you are without the thought Clarissa should get to know you. What do you see before you?
I have a very hard time picturing that. Because she always leaves whenever I go over there. So I'm thinking, okay, so if she was there, I don't know. I can't picture myself not being uncomfortable in her presence, feeling free just to play with the baby and to visit with Brian.
Okay.
I would feel like I was judged and scrutinized with every move and everything that I said.
Okay. Great. And so here's what's coming up. What I'm doing over on this side is we see that there's a few more thoughts bubbling to the surface. You know, I'm uncomfortable in her presence. So we might actually do the work, I'm uncomfortable in her presence. Is it true? And you're like, well, damn tune it is. Right? But yeah, we can, but again, we can walk through each one of the questions and how do you react? How do you show up when you believe the thought, I'm uncomfortable in her presence? Even if you are just passing momentarily, how do you react when you believe the thought, I'm uncomfortable in her presence?
Maybe standoffish or not so nice or not as loving and accepting as I think I am.
Yeah, you know, and that's pretty honest. Yeah. And who would you be without the thought, I'm uncomfortable in her presence?
Free just to visit my son and the baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And might we imagine that if you're uncomfortable in her presence, like, can you imagine what that might be like for her? right? So she's not even getting to actually know the real you. She's getting to know a version that's uncomfortable.
I guess, too, if I'm in the presence and I'm just not being uncomfortable with her, she doesn't like it whenever I talk to her. I don't think she likes it when I look at her, but no.
Okay, and you know what? And I would take each one of those. Literally, I would. You know, I know.
Uh-huh.
Is to take each one. It's like she doesn't like it when I look at her. Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? She doesn't like it when you look at her.
No, because I can't think her thoughts.
Yeah. That's sad.
I can only, facial expressions, I can only think of, from her facial expressions, it's my interpretation of what I believe she's thinking, which may or may not be true.
Right. Right. Exactly. So we see a few other ones.
I need to get serious with a bunch of papers like you did with this issue.
Yeah, well, seriously, it's, you know, and, you know, here's another one, is it hurts my son that she's not getting to know you. It's like, is that true?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so because my son told me that.
Okay. And
my son said the last thing in the world he ever wanted was a wife that couldn't stand his mother.
Okay. So good to, well, and here's an interesting one with this one. It's like, you know, she's hurting your son. It's like, well, certainly based on the feedback, yes. And how many times might you be holding the thought, she should be getting to know me, or she's hurting my son, and in that moment, your son is actually maybe not hurting in that moment.
I guess there could be a lot of moments like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's another one that you said was around, she should be like me. Is that true?
No. I know that that one's not true, but I just have these things in my head sometimes, like everybody should think the way I think.
I know. That's a good one. And I'm kind of laughing here with you only because, you know, it's true. It's like we all share the same kinds of thoughts. You know, you're not alone.
And I know I talk myself through it because I know it's different family dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was raised with a different family, with different family dynamics. And she's never, I mean, hour-wise, we really haven't spent a whole lot of time together. But I obviously did a couple of things that irritated her, which made her just not want to be around me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so my son, who is very, very close to me, she always says we're not close because we don't talk to each other every day. And so my son, he's just like, she doesn't know what she's talking about because she doesn't know how I feel. But, I mean, my son's a mama's boy, too. So a lot of people think maybe she's just jealous of the fact that my son is so close to me. I mean, my son, he's 30, but
mm-hmm.
people tell me things that most people can't believe he tells me.
Right, right. Well, so let's circle back here, and let's even look at one of the turnarounds. Clarissa should get to know you. Turn it around.
I should get to know Clarissa.
Okay. And give me three reasons that statement is as true or truer than the original thought.
I should get to know her. Because I know my feelings, I know how I feel, and I believe that anybody that my son loves has to be a good person, so I would really like to be able to see her and know her the way Brian does.
Okay. Yeah, so that might be a really nice perspective to live from is really just this lens of curiosity of getting to know her. What's another possible turnaround?
hard if she doesn't talk to me. No, my son tells me stuff. I do ask him about her, so I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah.
What's another
possible turnaround here? Clarissa should get to know you.
That Chris should not get to know me.
Yeah. Might make your life simpler.
Yeah. Somebody mentioned that to me once. Maybe it was a good thing, a blessing.
Yeah, one less complication.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's another possible turnaround? Maybe look at bringing yourself here. I should get to know me.
Oh, okay.
Try that one on.
I think I know. I should get to know me.
Yeah. So could that thought be as true or truer as Clarissa should get to know me?
Could that thought be what? Truer, truer?
Yeah, that you should get to know you.
Maybe truer. I should know myself better than anybody else knows me.
Mm-hmm.
I have to live with myself 100% of the time.
Yeah. And do you feel like you know everything there is to know about you and getting to know you?
No, I don't think that I know everything about myself.
Yeah.
I surprise myself sometimes.
Well, and one thing that we can discover about inquiry is when you're busy thinking about Clarissa and the fact that she should be getting to know you, you know, how is that impacting your ability to get to know you? You know, there's so many thoughts over there with Clarissa that who's available for you? Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
So it literally can be.
My first thought is sad, but my first thought is Mikey's thinking of me, and that's not right either.
Well,
my husband gets angrier. I think sometimes he gets angrier over the situation than I do, and so I think that even makes me more tension. So that would be, I guess, something else that I'd have to, a whole new avenue of doing the work is letting, because he shouldn't care about this problem as much as he does, but he does.
You're talking about your husband?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that brings into a whole nother.
Well, that was my first thought. That's why I just sort of laughed, because I was like, he's thinking of me. But no, I should think of, because if I just thought of me and concentrated on knowing me and what I like and what I don't like, which is I enjoy spending time with my son. I enjoy spending time with the baby.
And how about just stopping and enjoying time with you? You know, like really just being present and available for yourself. Like what could really be available there? And with every turnaround, it's with every thought for that matter, it's like when we're so caught up in thoughts over there, and this was one of my biggest insights in doing the work, you know, with Bruce, the guy, you know, it's like there was so much preoccupation over there that there was less available to be with me, to, you know, do my own inner work, to be creative, to, you know, do what needed to be done. So it's a constant coming back to ourselves. You know, at one level, that's kind of one of the big insights of inquiry. So there's lots that you can do here. And I really appreciate you just being willing to come here and in the forum and share openly. Looks like there's lots of opportunity with Clarissa. You know, pull out your notepad and just really, you know, again, be gentle with yourself on each one. And it's, again, if we're approaching inquiry and the work as a goal to try and, you know, rid thoughts from our mind, it will be less effective. But if you really just stop genuinely and look at truth, you know, and recognizing reality, kind of coming back to some of those core principles, then you may ultimately find a real sense of peace. And I can imagine that, you know, then you're showing up differently. And at the point when there's no attachment to getting to know Clarissa, maybe the opportunity when she's like all of a sudden feels differently towards you and shows up differently. That's often how it works.
And that's basically is just to where I can be at peace with the situation. That's what I ultimately want, regardless what it is. But then also I have her picture on my vision board. So when I look at my vision board, I tell her I love her.
And that's beautiful. And I would go with as many thoughts of, you know, really just going through and being, you know, be thorough, be generous with your Judge Your Neighbor worksheets, because I can totally see for you that there'll be a point when you're going to be giving me an email or a phone call and saying, guess what, you know, we actually just really had a wonderful day together. And it'll be because you are totally connected to you and not at all worried about her getting to know you or not. So I'm just noticing where we are with time, and we need to wrap the call up, bring it to a close. So how is that process for you, Cindy?
It was a good experience. I mean, it brought a lot of thoughts to my mind that I hadn't thought about whenever I've tried to do it by myself. But I do not know Katie's work well at all. I know very little about it. I'm like a brand new newbie with it.
Well, good. Well,
the first time I even tried to use it was whenever it was mentioned on the forum. So, and so then I looked at her website and learned a little bit and listened to your interview with her.
Oh, good, good.
After some of your calls with her, but that's all that I've done. So it's not like I'm real.
Yes, good, good, good. Well, and let me just mention here for the recording that on my website, lifecoachmary.com, if you go to Conversations with the Masters and scroll down, you'll see I've interviewed Byron Katie twice, and hopefully I'll be interviewing her again. I just adore her work, and you can see why it's so, so powerful. So as Katie would say, welcome to the work. And, you know, embrace away as you look and apply these four questions in the turnaround. Excellent. I'm just going to wrap the call up right here because at the bottom of the hour, we will have one more call. Oh, one more little announcement. First off, I just want to announce as winners that we have two winners for the commitment contest, Cindy Holbrook, who was just here on the line with me, and Carol Steinberg are both winners of a free ticket to the Inner Peace Immersion Retreat. So thank you, ladies, for your participation and your commitment to Momentum Mastery. And then just a note, our next call is Tuesday, June 21st at 5 p.m. Pacific, and because we have this foundation of the work, we're really going to just be jumping in and I'm going to be working through as really just answering your questions about inquiry and working with as many people possible over our time together doing the work. So with that, I just want to thank everyone for being here in our listening audience. I'm going to just open up the lines real quick. And big thank you to all of you. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Mary. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Mary. Bye-bye.